This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for June 2016. Well, the nights aren't very long, but in fact we have two lovely planets to observe, certainly in the first couple of weeks or so. So it's not such a bad month after all. Let's in fact have a look at the planets first. Jupiter. It's now past its best, but it still stands out in the southwest and west at nightfall. Its brightness is falling slightly from magnitude -2.1 to -1.9. At the same time, the angular size drops from 37 to 34 arc seconds. Jupiter is now in the lower part of Leo, slowly moving eastwards towards Virgo, which it will enter in August. Our best views of the planet are now past for this apparition, but with a small telescope, one should easily be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere and up to four of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Saturn reaches opposition. That's when it will be approximately due south at midnight UT or 1 a.m. BST on the 3rd of June, and so will be visible in the southeast at nightfall and will not set until dawn the following morning. It is moving slowly in retrograde motion in the lower part of Ophiuchus, but close to the fan of three stars that make up the head of Scorpius, and about 7 degrees up and to the left of Antares. So obviously a good time to observe Saturn, whose globe is 18 arc seconds across, and whose rings span some 41 arc seconds across. They make a beautiful sight as they are tilted 26 degrees from the line of sight, almost as open as they can be. It is rather sad that Saturn is now in the low part of the ecliptic and will only reach an elevation of 20 degrees when due south. I was able to actually view Saturn through a 16-inch telescope from a latitude of plus 29 in the Sahara Desert, and it was absolutely stunning. Perhaps a trip to the southern hemisphere is called for. Mercury. Mercury is a pre-dawn object for the first week or so of the month, best seen about 30 to 45 minutes before sunrise. It starts the month at magnitude plus 0.8 and an angular size of 9 arc seconds. This increases to magnitude 0 by the 11th, perhaps the best time to view, but the angular size will then have dropped to 7.3 arc seconds. It will still be only 7 degrees above the horizon, so difficult to spot, and a good low horizon in the east will certainly be needed. Well, Mars reached opposition on May the 22nd and came closest to the Earth for 11 years on the 30th, so June is a second excellent month to observe the salmon pink planet. It starts a month at magnitude -2, drops to -1.7 by the 16th and -1.4 by month's end. At the same time, the angular size is dropping from 18.6 to 16.4 arc seconds. Mars is currently moving in retrograde motion in Libra until the 30th, when it resumes its eastward path through the stars, moving back towards Saturn. Well, we shan't see Venus this month as it reaches superior conjunction, that is, directly behind the Sun, on June the 6th. So, not till a month or a while before we can see it. Well, what about the highlights? Well, from June the 1st to the 8th, Mars at its best for 11 years. It reached, as I said, opposition on the 22nd of May, so it'll be visible for most of the hours of darkness. The angular size at closest approach varies due to the ellipticity of the orbit of Mars and to a far lesser extent to that of the Earth, and will reach 26 arc seconds in 25,695 AD, a while to wait. At its closest approach in 2003, it actually reached an angular size of 25.1 arc seconds, its largest angular diameter for some 60,000 years. In July 2018, it will reach 24.2 arc seconds, but for both this opposition and that in 2018, Mars will be very low in the ecliptic and hence at low elevation, so the atmosphere will limit our views of this lovely planet somewhat. Happily, there will be a higher elevation in the sky when it reaches opposition in 2020. Well, Saturn reaches opposition, as I said, on the 3rd of June. It lies in the southern part of Ophiuchus, up and to the left of the orange star Antares in Scorpius. Held steady, binoculars should enable you to see Saturn's brightest moon, Titan, at magnitude 8.2. A small telescope will show the rings with magnifications of times 25 or more, and one of 6 to 8 inches aperture with a magnification of perhaps 200, coupled with a night of good seeing, that's when the atmosphere is calm, will show Saturn and its beautiful ring system in its full glory. Like Jupiter, Saturn does show belts, but their colours are muted in comparison. The thing, of course, that makes Saturn stand out is its ring system. The two outermost rings, A and B, are separated by a gap called Cassini's division, which should be visible in a telescope of 4 or more inches aperture, if seeing conditions are good. Lying within the B ring, but far less bright and difficult to spot, is the C or crepe ring. Due to the orientation of Saturn's rotation axis of 27 degrees with respect to the plane of the solar system, the orientation of the rings as seen by us changes as it orbits the Sun, and twice each orbit they lie edge on to us, and so can hardly be seen. This last happened in 2009, and they are now opening out, currently, as I said, at an angle of 26 degrees to the line of sight. They'll continue to open until May 2017, and then narrow until March 2025, when they will be edge-on again. Well, what other highlights? Well, June is a nice month to fly in the globular cluster in Hercules and perhaps spot the double-double in Lyra, and they're two very nice objects to observe in the eastern sky well after dark this month. And on the night sky page of the Jodrell Bank website, I give you a star chart to show you how to find them. The double-double appears as a double star in binoculars, just to the left, in fact, of Vega, the bright star in Lyra. But if you observe it with a telescope and the seeing is good, then each of those stars is revealed to be a double star, hence the name, the double-double. A hard one to spot, but a challenge, is on June the 3rd, just before dawn. About 30 or so minutes before dawn, given a low eastern horizon, of course clear skies, it should be possible to spot Mercury shining at magnitude plus 0.7, just 3 degrees to the left of a very thin crescent moon. Perhaps that's worth a try. Late June is a very good time to spot noctilucent clouds. They're also known as polar mesospheric clouds, and they're most commonly seen in the deep twilight towards the north from our latitude. They are the highest clouds in the atmosphere, at heights of around 80 kilometres or 50 miles, normally too faint to be seen. They are visible when illuminated by sunlight from below the northern horizon, whilst the lower parts of the atmosphere are in shadow. So, on clear dark nights, as light is draining from the northwestern sky long after sunset, take a look towards the north, and you might just spot them. I usually give you something interesting to observe on the moon, and on June the 14th and 15th, the Terminator lies quite close to what is called the Alpine Valley. It's a cleft in the Apennine mountain chain that marks the edge of Mare Imbrium. Towards the upper end of the chain, you should see a cleft across them, which is called the Alpine Valley. It's about 7 miles wide and 79 miles long. There is, in fact, a thin rill which runs along its length, which is actually quite a challenge to observe, and to be honest, I've never seen it. Over the next 2 nights, the dark crater Plato and the young crater Copernicus will come into view. This is a very interesting part of the moon. Well, usually first, so this should come first, guys, I talk about the heavens, so let me start. Well, we don't have a long period of darkness, but as the sun light dwindles away in the west, one should be able to pick out Leo with its bright star Regulus, below which is the planet Jupiter, setting towards the western horizon. Higher up in the south is a bright star called Arcturus in the constellation of Bootes, and up to its right is the Plough, which is part of Ursa Major. The two bright stars, Dubhe and Merek, pointing towards Polaris, the pole star, close to the north celestial pole. Given a good low southern horizon, one will be able to see Scorpius with the bright star Antares. Saturn is up to its left and stays roughly in the same place during the month, but Mars, over to its right, will gradually be moving across the constellation. And then rising in the east is another rather lovely region of the sky, the constellations of Cygnus, Lyra, and Aquila. Their bright stars, Deneb, Vega, and Altair, make up what is called the Summer Triangle. If you actually go about two-thirds of the way from Altair to Vega, you come across a dark region of the Milky Way. It's called the Cygnus Rift. In there is a rather nice little asterism. It's called Brocky's Cluster, or more commonly the coat hanger, because it looks a bit like an upside-down coat hanger. It's probably all there is that we can see, but I do hope that when it is dark, if you're up late, you'll have a chance to observe our wonderful sky.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our listeners below the equator, here's our Antipodean storyteller, Haritina Mogasanu, with the night sky where you are.
Clear skies from the top of Mount Victoria in Wellington, and greetings from Space Place at Carter Observatory in Aotearoa, New Zealand. My name is Haritina Mogasanu, and tonight I am your storyteller from the Southern Hemisphere. Top of Mount Victoria here in Wellington, New Zealand, is where I always felt on top of the world. To the south, I can sense Antarctica's frozen breath. To the north, I see glimpses of my far, far away home beacons, Andromeda, Arcturus, and Vega. They are like a safety net for me, something familiar. East and west are obviously looking weird. The sun moves from right to left in the sky in the southern hemisphere, leaning towards north. In the northern hemisphere, the sun still goes from east to west, but moving from left to right, leaning towards south. So as I said before in previous broadcasts, the shadow in the afternoon here looks just like the shadow of the morning there. But even after 11 years, it still puzzles me how the light still reminds me of the wrong time of the day, just the same as I still have to stop and think which door am I supposed to use when getting inside my car. Being in the city of Wellington, that I grew to love after all these years, makes me feel grateful for the courage to leave my safe shore back home to seek for my diamonds in the sky. Wellington at night glows like a net of diamonds itself, and it's the best sky that probably any capital of the world has ever seen. As for the star lore that people brought here, well, it's the most spectacular by far. Which brings me to the month of June, when here in New Zealand we celebrate the Maori New Year, Matariki. Matariki is a lunar celebration, just like Easter. As you do with the Polynesian cultures, not everyone does everything in the same way. But some tribes celebrate the new year, the Tauhou, by observing the heliacal rising of the Pleiades, M45, or, as the cluster is called at this time of the year by Maori, Matariki. Some tribes use the star called Puanga, or Raijo from Orion. But no matter what marker they use, they observe its heliacal rising, that is, before the sun, just after the first new moon that occurs after the longest night. I feel compelled to mention the fact that they only call the cluster Matariki this time of the year in the morning. The same stars appear in the asterism of Te Waka o Tamarereti, present on the November's night sky, and also 3 months later when they make Te Tawhiti, the shining one. I spoke about these asterisms in my previous broadcasts. Nobody calls these stars Matariki then. The small group of stars are just part of something bigger. This was quite a discovery for me because in the Western sky lore, asterisms have only one name, no matter what time of the year it is. As I was going to discover later, not only Matariki, the Pleiades, are part of the shape-shifting stories in the sky, but also most of Maori legends imagine constellations that are only seasonal. Back to the new year, here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, the beautiful cluster of Mata Ariki, the Eye of the God, rises before the sun to mark the new year, just after the new moon's occurrence. The cluster will start being visible towards the middle of the month, that is, if you wake up very early in the morning just before sunrise and look east. However, the first new moon of June is on the 5th. But the cluster will be too low on the horizon to see. Counting the fact that Wellington's landscape is quite hilly, and the fact that the Maori Tohunga Tatai Arurangi, which we know as astronomers, had to see the cluster visually before they could declare the new year, that positions, realistically, the period of Matariki this year, just after the longest night of the year, again, the winter solstice, which is also occurring in June. The next new moon after the 5th of June is on 4th of July. Technically, the period of the new year lasts for about a month from one new moon to the other, and for some tribes was the time in between the years when everything would reset and people would visit the year that has passed and think ahead to the year that would follow. You can hear more about Matariki and Maori astronomy in this month's interview that I took with Tua Waka, Vice Chair of the Society for Maori Astronomy Research and Traditions. In Wellington this year, Space Place at Carter Observatory has organized two dawn ceremonies. The first is on Saturday, the 18th of June, and the second is on the 22nd of June. That is, of course, providing the weather stays clear. You can always check our website for more details. And also, of course, this month, we will be incorporating Maori astronomy in our talks. The dawn ceremony will be held on top of Mount Victoria, where we go every year, and it will start from 5:30 a.m. One thing I can promise you, there will be hot chocolate to soothe the most frozen soul, as our wonderful program manager, Rachel Ingram, always makes sure every year that we celebrate the new year in style. We'll see you there if you're there. Back to our evening sky. Bright planets light up the night along with the brightest stars once again. Golden Jupiter appears midway up the north sky soon after sunset. Orange Mars is due east. Jupiter and Mars are similar in brightness, but you can tell them by color and position. Cream-colored Saturn is below and right of Mars and fainter, directly below orange Antares, the brightest star in Scorpius. Saturn is at opposition on the 3rd of June, rising close to the time of sunset and setting near the time the sun rises. The moon will be near Jupiter on the 11th and 12th and passing by the Mars-Saturn region on the 17th to 19th. Low in the west at dusk, Sirius Takurua, the brightest true star, twinkles blue and it sets around 9 p.m. mid-month. It will appear again in the morning sky to help point at Matariki. Kanopus Atutahi, the chief of the Maori stars and the second brightest star, is in the southwest. Atutahi is a chief because it can always be seen in the sky. It is a circumpolar star, one that never sets but goes around in circles. Sirius Takurua, it's the zenith star of Tahiti and it was used so by the Polynesians. Sirius appears bright both because it is 20 times brighter than the sun, and also because it is relatively close at almost around 9 light years. Canopus, the second brightest star in the sky, is higher in the southwest sky, circling lower into the south later on. Canopus is around 300 light years away and 13,000 times bigger than the Sun, but almost of the same spectral type as the Sun. I fell in love with Canopus when I found out that is on board the Voyagers as a positioning aid. In fact, many starcraft carry a special camera called Canopus Star Tracker. Before the magnetic compasses, Canopus was also considered the South Star, and navigation was made based on its position. And of course, Canopus was the navigator of Argo Navis, and it is part of the modern constellation of Carina, which also used to be part of Argo Navis. Opposite Canopus, Arcturus is a lone bright star in the northeast in the constellation of Butes. Polynesians call it Hokulea, the star of joy. Arcturus is the zenith star of the Hawaiian Islands. Its orange light often twinkles red and green when it's low in the sky. It sets in the northwest in the morning hours. Crux, the Southern Cross, is south of the zenith. Beside it and brighter are Beta and Alpha Centauri, often called the pointers because they point at Crux. Alpha Centauri is the closest naked eye star, 4.3 light years away. Beta Centauri and many of the stars in Crux are hot, extremely bright blue giant stars, hundreds of light years away. They are members of a group of stars that formed together, then scattered. The group is called the Scorpio Centaurus Association. Antares or Rehua is marking the scorpion's heart. In Maori, this is the asterism of Manaia Kiterangi, the guardian of the heavens, which is one of the three names that Scorpius has here. More so, the entire asterism of Scorpius is the zenith asterism of Aotearoa, the land of the long white cloud. This land is so big compared to the other Pacific islands that it needs an entire asterism to mark its position in the sky. Rehua is a red giant star, 600 light years away and 19,000 times brighter than the Sun. Red giants are much bigger than the Sun but much cooler, hence the orange-red color. Though hundreds of times bigger than the Sun, Antares is only about 20 times the Sun's mass or weight. Most of the star's mass is in its hot, dense core. The rest of the star is thin gas. Red giants are dying stars, ringing the last of the thermonuclear energy from their cores. Antares will end in a spectacular supernova explosion in a few million years. Below Scorpius is Sagittarius, its brighter stars marking the British teapot. The Milky Way is brightest and broadest in the southeast towards Scorpius and Sagittarius. It remains bright but narrower through Crux and Carina, then fades in the western sky. The Milky Way is our edgewise view of the galaxy. The thick hub of the galaxy, 30,000 light years away, is in Sagittarius. Behold the Milky Way kiwi, a dark patch in the sky resembling a kiwi bird, holding on its head, just like a crown, the galactic center. A scan along the Milky Way with binoculars will find many clusters of stars and some glowing gas clouds. Relatively nearby, dark clouds of dust and gas dim the light of distant stars in the Milky Way. They look like holes and slots in the Milky Way. There is a well-known dark cloud called the Coalsack by the Southern Cross. Maori call it Te Patiki, the flounder. It is around 600 light years away. The dust, more like smoke particles in size, comes off red stars. These clouds eventually coalesce into new stars. Then, there are the clouds of Magellan, Large Magellanic Cloud and Small Magellanic Cloud in the lower southern sky. They are luminous patches easily seen by eye in a dark night. These are two small galaxies, about 160,000 and 200,000 light-years away. Mercury is in the northeast dawn sky. At the beginning of the month, it rises 2 hours before the sun. It sinks lower through the month. Around the 17th, it will be left of orange Aldebaran. Further left of Mercury will be the Pleiades Matariki star cluster, just appearing in the dawn twilight. To see it, you will have to learn how to count in Maori. First, locate Atutahi. In the dawn sky, it will be floating low in the southeastern sky. Tahi in Maori means one. Then follow along the Milky Way, you will see blue Takurua, Sirius. Rua means two in Maori. Then, on the same line, when they will get parallel with the horizon, the three stars from Orion's belt, Tau Toru. In Maori, Toru means three. Tahi, Rua, Toru. Atutahi, Takurua, Tau Toru. One, two, three. If you join Takurua with Tau Toru and extend the line towards north, just passing Taumata Kuku, the Hyades, and Red Aldebaran, following just a little bit more towards north, you will find Matariki. At 444 light years away from Earth, Matariki stars are hot, young, and blue. And with the naked eye, you can see six of them. With a pair of binoculars, you can see many more. The best view is with a smaller magnification binoculars, as they can fit more stars in the field of view. The Pleiades, or Messier 45, are about 100 million years old, being born just after the dinosaurs went extinct on Earth. The light from the Pleiades Matariki left the cluster almost in the same time as Galileo was pointing his telescope to the heavens. This concludes our Jodcast for June 2016 at Space Place at Carter Observatory. May you enjoy clear and dark skies so that you can always see the stars, and always remember that we are made of the same stardust as they are. Kia kaha and clear skies from Space Place at Carter Observatory in Aotearoa, New Zealand, and since the new year will start soon, Namihi o te tau hou.